Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lotto-Annahmestelle. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter bjoerk.de.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business. Und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
I clocked in a few minutes before midnight. Same as always. I swiped my badge, watched the light turn green, and walked into the half-lit lobby where the vending machines buzzed louder than the lights. I set my thermos down, tapped the monitor to wake it up, and started another shift guarding a building that never saw traffic. Technically, I work security for a research facility on the edge of the industrial district. What kind of research? I couldn't tell you. They don't brief the night guards. My job is simple. Walk the halls every hour, check the doors, monitor the cameras, and call it in if anyone tries to sneak onto the property. No one ever does. Honestly, I think the whole place is a shell company. There are labs and conference rooms, sure, but I've never seen more than 3 or 4 people in the building during the daytime turnover. The lights stay off in half the offices. Most of the server racks hum to keep themselves busy. Once in a while, I'll see a crate in the loading bay marked hazard, but it's always empty by the time my shift starts. The boredom is what gets the most guys. Not me. I don't mind the lack of action. There's a comfort in routines that never change. I keep a radio on the desk, one of those weather alert units that doubles as an emergency broadcast receiver, wired to receive work notifications that never came. Only the occasional emergency alert would pop through, never important to me, but something to break up the monotony of the shift. Usually, it just loops weather updates or dead air. Tonight, it hums softly, tuned low enough to ignore, but loud enough to notice if something serious happened. Outside, the wind pushed against the security glass. I sipped lukewarm coffee and flipped through the incident report log, already knowing it would be empty. The camera feed showed still hallways, a broom leaning against a janitor's closet, a copy room no one used. The red light above the exit sign blinked at its usual pace. I sat back, let the chair creak under me, and settled in for another shift, watching nothing happen. I'm good at being invisible. I don't ask questions, I don't get in the way. I do the job, fill out the forms, and keep my head down. Most people forget I'm even here. The shift had settled into that quiet dead zone between 2 and 3 a.m., where time stretches and the brain starts to drift. I was halfway through a stale protein bar and watching the cursor blink on a blank incident report, when the emergency radio crackled to life. 3 sharp tones, the standard ones. I didn't react at first. The emergency alert system runs regular tests once or twice a week, always the same canned message, usually about weather conditions or missing children 3 states over. I kept chewing, waiting for the usual script. This is a test of an emergency alert system. My ears perked up at the authority of the voice. This is a message for... There was a pause. Richard James Summerfield. My full name. Not just the one I use for work. The full thing. The one from my birth certificate, middle name included. Please remain indoors and do not engage with a noise outside your perception. Estimated test duration, 1 hour. The message ended there. No explanation, no origin. The radio cut back to low static. I sat up, the protein bar still in my hand, half chewed. I fiddled with the radio, expecting it to play the last message again. Nothing. No timestamp logged, no saved segment. I tried to convince myself it was a prank broadcast, some local station playing games, a coincidence. Maybe someone hacked the system and fed in a custom message to mess with people. That didn't explain the name. It didn't explain why the warning felt so specific. I started out by saying it was a test. Maybe it was some new system they're piloting, one that pulls names from local databases to make it feel personalized. A mistake, maybe. I sat back down, suddenly aware of how quiet the building had become. The only sound was the wind brushing against the high windows and the low, steady static humming through the emergency radio. I spent the next few minutes trying to shake off the message. I kept telling myself it was nothing, just some rogue test broadcast. Still, I couldn't stop glancing at the radio. It hadn't made a sound since, just the soft hiss of static, steady and quiet. I thought about unplugging it, but I kept it on in case something important came through. I made another round through the halls. Everything looked exactly the way it always did. Dead screens, humming fluorescence, the distant echo of my own footsteps. When I came back to the desk, I checked the log, tapped through my camera feeds, and started filling out some paperwork just to keep my hands busy. That's when the tone started again. Three quick pulses, followed by the same voice. This is a message for Richard James Summerfield. You were 11 years old when you refused to visit your mother in the hospital. My fingers stopped moving. You told your brother it didn't matter, that she wouldn't remember. You said it to hurt him. I stared at the radio, unable to breathe for a second. You were wrong. There was a pause. No static this time, just silence stretching for 2 beats longer than it should have. You will attempt to check the loading dock in 35 seconds. Please reconsider. The radio clicked off. I didn't move at first, just sat there, heart knocking against my ribs, hands cold. I hadn't spoken about that fight in years, maybe ever. The words it used weren't quoted, but they were accurate enough to know. Whoever or whatever was speaking understood the shape of it, knew the guilt that still curled up behind my teeth. Part of me thought this had to be a setup. Maybe someone trying to make me believe the broadcast was intelligent, alive. Could be a deep data scrape, old emails, recordings, an elaborate hoax. But another part of me was already walking toward the back hall. I didn't plan it. My body moved on its own. I scanned my badge at the service door and followed the concrete corridor past the janitor's closet and the old vending machine. The dock was at the far end. I reached the metal door and pulled it open. The dock outside was empty. No trucks, no footprints, just wind moving through the chain-link fence. Still, I stood there too long, longer than I needed to, waiting for something else to happen. By the time the third message came through, I was more irritated than rattled. Whatever was going on, I figured someone had too much time and access to things they shouldn't. It didn't help that nothing else had happened. No follow-ups, no intruders, no evidence anyone was watching me, even though something clearly was. I kept running mental checklists. It could have been a test, a psychological experiment. Maybe someone at the company had wired in a new kind of behavioral monitoring. But if that were true, why start dragging my personal life into it? Still, I wasn't scared. Not really. Just tired and annoyed and ready to finish my shift and go home. I was walking the northeast corridor when it started again. No tone this time, no build-up. Do not turn around. I stopped mid-stride. I didn't breathe. Something in my spine locked. The hallway behind me had no lights. I hadn't noticed it before. I could only tell by the darkness in my peripheral vision. But it was completely dark. Not dim, just gone. I waited 5 seconds, 10. My body refused to relax. Then, against better judgment, I started to turn. Slow at first, just a glance over the shoulder. That was enough. The far wall to my left rippled, my vision warped around the edges, colors bleeding into one another, angles stretching wrong. My left eye went cloudy, my right started to tunnel, and under it all, the sound began to rise. Glass shattering, nails on tile, teeth clacking too fast to be human, breathing from too many mouths at once, screams that never open their throats, the kind of noise that makes your insides want to curl away from your skin. I stopped, didn't finish the turn, didn't look into the dark, just stood there, half pivoted, jaw clenched tight. Then I faced forward again. It all stopped. Instantly. The lights returned to normal, the sounds vanished, my vision cleared. But when I turned to look down the hallway again, not behind me, but ahead, the corridor had changed. A rolling cabinet now blocked the path I was heading towards. A steel door appeared where there was none before. Emergency lighting outlined a new path branching left where there hadn't been one 10 minutes earlier. I didn't try to force the old path open. Instead, I stared at it, realizing something important. Whatever this was, it didn't want me to go back. It had rules, even if I didn't understand them yet. I didn't have a destination at first. I just wanted to find the front entrance again, or an exit, maybe the main stairwell. Maybe the fire doors, somewhere that didn't feel like it had been rewritten behind my back. The building wasn't the same anymore. Corridors I'd walked 100 times were suddenly too long or too short. Some ended in blank walls, leading me into doors that only led to mystery. Others turned corners that shouldn't exist. I passed the mechanical room that I knew was supposed to be on the 3rd floor, but I was still on the 1st. The elevator didn't work, the cameras were frozen, and the maps on the wall were blank, scrubbed to white. Still, I kept moving. My best chance now was memory, using approximate landmarks, no matter how distorted, to try discern where I really was, trying to find an anchor point so I could try navigate to a way out. But more often than not, I found myself just randomly navigating based on whatever options I had ahead of me. That came with its own danger. If I followed a path that led to a dead end, I couldn't just spin around and go back. I'd learned that the hard way. Once or twice I flinched at a sound behind me, footsteps where there shouldn't have been, a door slamming shut at the far end of a hall, and instinct took over. I'd start to turn, always just a little, always just enough to catch the start of something wrong. A ripple in the air, that shrieking, layered noise bleeding through again. And always, I caught myself just in time. It was becoming reflex. Forward only, no matter what I heard. That was when the voice returned. No warning tone, just there, suddenly, woven into the air like it had always been speaking. Route correction in effect. Please proceed to the observation zone. Avoid interior mirrors. I stopped walking. The hallway ahead dipped slightly before curving to the right. I hadn't been down this way in months. I was pretty sure it only led to storage, not any place labelled observation zone. The voice didn't speak again, just the one line delivered in that semi-human tone. I kept going, choosing a side path instead. It should have led past the central IT server room and back toward the lobby. At least it used to. Halfway down the corridor, I spotted a round security mirror mounted in the corner. From where I stood, I could see myself in it, blurry but centered. That wasn't what stopped me. What stopped me was the blackness behind my reflection. Pitch black, like everything behind me had been cut out of the frame, even though I knew there were lights on. I stepped closer. When I stood beneath it and looked up, the reflection was gone. The surface of the mirror was now just glass dark. No light, no shape, nothing reflected at all. Every reflective surface I passed after that behaved the same way. At a glance, they showed my silhouette and blackness behind me. The moment I got close, they turned to dead glass. I stopped checking them after a while. At that point, I wasn't just avoiding the path the broadcast wanted me to take. I was actively working around it, trying to stay ahead of whatever route it was building for me. I didn't trust it. I didn't trust any of this. But I couldn't afford a mistake. If I wandered into a corridor with no other way out, and the walls behind me decided to erase the path I'd come through, I'd be stuck. Or worse, I'd be forced to turn around. And I was starting to believe that something was waiting for me to do just that. I was moving faster now, not running but close to it. My heart had settled into a low, steady beat just above normal. I kept my eyes forward, scanning for changes in the layout, watching the walls for fresh seams or strange signage. My flashlight flickered once, then came back strong. I tapped the battery gauge. Still full. That was when the broadcast cut in again. It didn't wait for me to stop. No setup. The voice spoke as if it had been listening the whole time, which I now suspected it had. You are checking the battery level. My chest tightened. I stopped walking. It knew what I was doing. Then it added one more line. Avoid the next intersection. You won't listen. We are sorry. I stood in the center of a long, low corridor, the overhead lights buzzing above me in rhythm with my pulse. The radio shut off again. Nothing but the quiet hum of old fluorescent tubes. The line echoed through my head as I moved again, slower now, eyes narrowing as the hall opened into a crossroad. There, at the intersection, I heard it. Not loudly, but it was there. Sobbing, faint, choked and slow, like someone trying not to be heard. And underneath it, another sound. Breathing, ragged, wet. Then a single, mechanical click. I stopped at the threshold, one foot still in my hallway, the other just past the corner. The crying sounded closer. I didn't move for a while. I stood frozen, thinking about the voice, about the exact wording. You won't listen. So, what did that mean? That I was already choosing? That I had already failed the test it mentioned? I tried to trace my thoughts, to see where the decision had started. Was I truly choosing anything here? Or was I reacting, following a trail already laid out. If I went toward the crying, was that compassion, curiosity, or a script I was meant to follow? And if I didn't, would that be real defiance or another programmed branch? The hallway around me remained empty. The floor beneath my feet stayed steady, but my head swam with the idea that no matter what I did, I was already inside someone else's plan, that the system didn't need to control me, only predict me. I looked toward the direction of the crying, then I turned the other way and walked, fast and straight, until the sound disappeared behind me. The lights began cutting out one by one, not all at once. It started in the west corridor, then the break room, then the hallway just outside the server cages. A silent collapse of function, wing by wing. I heard it before I saw it, the soft flick of breakers flipping in sequence, leaving behind nothing but the hum of backup lighting and the sound of a low siren I'd never heard before. It wasn't blaring, not urgent. It pulsed slowly, steadily, as if reminding something to stay awake. Then every screen came to life. Monitors I hadn't touched in hours, tablets still plugged in and locked, the emergency radio, all of them glowed in perfect sync, showing the same cold white text over black. Subject deviation confirmed, sequence collapse in 12 minutes, manual override required. You are not authorized. Proceed. That was the first time it mentioned collapse. The first time it told me, openly, that this whole thing was breaking down. Though I had no idea what that truly meant. I didn't stay in that hallway. I kept moving, heading for the central spine of the building, hoping that if I stayed in motion, I could find some edge to all of this. But the layout had changed again. The ceilings dropped by almost a foot, the air vents had vanished, hallways had grown tighter, sharp turns where smooth curves had been before. I passed the supply room that looked identical to one I'd seen earlier. Same chairs, same desk, but the desk was on the left this time, and the wall clock ticked backwards. The floor creaked under my boots in a way it never had before. Soft, hollow, the weight of the building had shifted. Behind me, the sound began again. Clicking, but slower this time, deeper, metal tapping on tile. It echoed from far down the corridor, bouncing and multiplying until I couldn't tell which direction it was coming from. The air behind me pressed against my back. Not wind, just pressure, heavier than it should have been. My footsteps started replaying themselves. I would take a step, then hear it again half a second later, sometimes in sync, sometimes not. I heard voices too, ones I didn't recognize. They whispered things that didn't match my memories, but they sounded familiar anyway. I turned a corner. I stopped breathing, didn't move, didn't speak. I didn't turn, not even a glance. But the edges of my vision began to twitch. Not black, but movement, flickering just beyond where my eyes could land. Shadows stretching without a source, a curl of something sliding along the ceiling tiles above me. Never visible, always near. The clicking had stopped. It wasn't following me anymore. It was waiting. I pushed forward. I reached for a door I didn't recognize. Heavy steel, no markings. It opened with a small creak into a small room. A halogen strip flickered from above. There was no furniture, except for a metal table bolted to the floor. The room looked like it was used for experiments that were currently absent. On the table sat a mounted radio unit and a single folder. The cover was grey, stamped in red with a warning that read, "Pattern Violation Manual, Do Not Issue." I opened it. Every page was blank, except one. In the center, typed in plain black text, "If in doubt, turn around." I closed the folder, and I didn't turn. The corridor was waiting for me. Despite all the directions I took, I ended up back. Same length, same lights, same intersection. It hadn't changed since the last time I'd come to the crossroads. Except this time, the crying started before I even got close. It came from the far corridor, low at first, wet and staggered, the sound of someone trying not to be heard but failing. A woman maybe, young, or something trying to sound young. It echoed off the walls in slow pulses. Then came the radio. Turn around, comply, reset. Turn around, comply, reset. Over and over again. I stopped at the intersection. My eyes burned, my legs ached. I felt hollowed out, like every room I had passed through had scraped something away without asking. I stood still, not because I was afraid, but because I was furious. I said nothing out loud, but my mind screamed. I've followed your rules, I've broken them, I've walked your paths, avoided your traps. I've done everything but this. What if this is it? What if this is the only move left? What if the test was never to obey, but to disobey at the right time? I turned toward the corridor where the crying waited and stepped inside. The temperature dropped instantly. My ears rang. The walls tightened around me. The deeper I walked, the louder everything became. Screeching metal, whispers that knew my name, breathing behind my neck. Every noise layered on top of the next until there was no space between them. My vision narrowed, not completely black, but close to. The edges began to glitch, filled with static and flickers of color, as if the world behind me was being erased frame by frame. Something moved inside the walls, shapes pressed through drywall, outlines of people, but wrong. No features, just stretched skin where eyes and mouths should have been, arms folded the wrong way, fingers too long. They clawed softly at the air, not reaching for me, just twitching in rhythm with the noise. I didn't blink, I didn't speak. I kept walking. My heart felt too big for my ribs. Every breath rattled. The floor dropped slightly beneath my feet, like the hallway was being pulled downward. Then, everything stopped. One step, just one, crossed an invisible line. And the world snapped silent. The air warmed, my vision cleared, my ears rang in the absence of noise. I stood in the main lobby of the building. Fluorescent lights buzzed calmly overhead. The front windows were intact. I saw dawn breaking through the glass, faint orange light spilling across the floor. Then, a door behind the desk burst open. Dozens of people in black tactical gear poured through, sweeping the room. Rifles drawn, helmets down, no insignias, just armored suits and mirrored visors. Behind them came medical staff, scientists, techs with wheeled carts and blinking cases. They moved with urgency, but not panic. They knew this scene. They had trained for it. I turned slowly, looking over my shoulder, subconsciously grappling with the idea of being able to see behind me now. Where I just emerged, stood static. Not a wall exactly, more like the edge of a dome. It shimmered faintly, air trembling with digital interference. I could see through it, but the colors were wrong. Shapes moved inside, soft, slow, echoing my memory of the corridor I'd just walked. As I stared, a hand closed around my arm, firm, gloved, real. I turned. A soldier stood there, face hidden behind a matte black visor, already steering me away from the dome before I could speak. I spun to face the soldier. The man wore a full tactical helmet, visor down, not a slit of skin peeking through. "What is this?" I demanded. "What the hell happened? Who are you people?" The soldier didn't answer. He gripped my arm tighter and pulled me across the lobby, past rows of gear being unpacked, past medics shouting into headsets, past equipment I couldn't identify. I caught glimpses of heat sensors, portable servers, hissing tanks with red seals broken open. Everything buzzed with urgency, none of it explained. They had set up a temporary cordon using collapsible barriers and lighting rigs. Inside the makeshift zone, I saw others. 3, maybe 4. All wore lab coats, scorched and torn, some stained with ash, some flecked with static burn scoring. One woman sat hunched in the corner, cradling a cracked tablet to her chest as if it were a wounded animal. The soldier shoved me inside and stepped back. I didn't move, just stared. One of the scientists looked up, a man in his 50s, pale, wide-eyed, his face hollow with exhaustion. "You walked out?" he asked. His voice broke halfway through. "You got out on your own?" His shock emphasized how big of a deal this was, but without context, I still had no idea how to feel about it. "What happened in there? What's going on?" I asked. Finally, I got some answers. "This facility has been running for a few decades. Whatever you think is cutting edge looks like gears and sticks compared to what's done here." Another scientist, a co-worker maybe, shot him a look to shut him up. It seemed he couldn't reveal exactly what they were doing here. He stood slowly and crossed the space between us, lowered his voice to a hush, barely above a whisper. "You were inside the test field," he said. "That wasn't real. It was a prototype construct, an artificial cognitive environment, a simulation meant to study recursive decision-making and perceptual looping. It was never supposed to activate." He glanced toward the dome, still pulsing softly at the far end of the lobby. His eyes twitched. "Something went wrong," he continued. "It started responding to observation, growing, feeding on recursive feedback. The more we watched, the more it changed. We lost 2 teams trying to extract the workers." He paused, breathing heavier now. "But you weren't tagged. You weren't supposed to be there. You walked into the active field by accident, and somehow, you made it through, alone." Behind us, a klaxon burst to life, a different tone than before, sharper, faster. A voice shouted from one of the workstations, "Field integrity dropping, 50% and falling." I could see more teams running in, charging into the unknown. The scientist grabbed my shoulder. "If the containment fails," he said, "it doesn't stay in there. Each person running in will probably die. We just have to hope one manages to shut it down." I had nothing to say. All I could do was watch, with the extracted scientists, as these brave soldiers ran in to die like ants. Numbers versus odds, legions of deaths happening beyond the veil. Until eventually, The static dome dissipated with a screech, and a lone soldier stumbled out, torn almost to ribbons.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.